Before we get to that point, let us review some of the important issues that we need to have a sense of, I think, before we start the Masechet. So first of all, we need to take into consideration the structure of the Masechet as a whole. And it turns out that there's two ways, really, that this Masechet is organized. That it depends on the particular, there's differences between the Bavli, Yerushalmi. Some say it was just a question of how it evolved over time. But the truth is, it's a very clear-cut and reasonable understanding of why there are two approaches. The point is that the Masechet includes three major themes. The three major themes are, of course, the dinim of Chometz BePesach, and then we have the concepts that are nogea, the Seder Shel Pesach, which is a whole different issue, a whole different set of mitzvahs, and then we have the dinim of the Korban Pesach, which is essentially a kachim issue. Now, this Masechet deals with all three of those issues. So the question is how to organize it. So if we take a look at the Masechet as a description of our involvement in the mitzvahs, it's organized in our version very, very clearly. We start off with the night before, which is the Bedikas Chametz night, go on to the morning, then go on to the dinim of the Korban Pesach, which is in the afternoon. And then at the very end, we have the dinim of the Seder Shel Pesach, and that is basically the way we have it. Now, the other way of organizing it is to put the Inyanim of the Korban Pesach at the end, and then to go directly from the Inyanim of Hashbasa to through the afternoon, making Kiddush, doing the Seder, and that is what we have as the closing parak. To others, that is the parak that comes before the dinner of the Korban Pesach, and then we have what is called the Pesach Sheni. It's a play on words, obviously, which is the other Pesach, which has to do with all of the dinim of Korban Pesach, which has nothing in common, really, with the flavor of the Masechet at the beginning, for obvious reasons, because it's fundamentally a dine kachim thing and gets us all involved in some of those dinim. Okay, but that's the overall structure. Now, in terms of understanding what this first part of the Masechet is, so we do, it's true, we do start with the idea of the Bedikas Chametz, but there's obviously deeper issues that we need to think about why the Masechet begins this way. And that's because Bedikas Chametz is not only a time issue. Bedikas Chametz is our introduction into what is absolutely unique about the elements of Pesach and its mitzvahs. So let's consider, I mean, we never have such a concept elsewhere, correct? There's no idea of getting everything out of your house and, I mean, going wild to get out these little tiny pieces of chametz all over the place and so on. Where does that come from? And what lies behind it? And what are the mitzvahs that are associated with it? So there's something that's very important to note. And that is that in Pesach, we have mitzvahs that appear, nothing similar appears elsewhere. And that is that when it comes to chametz, we have this new mitzvah, what we call, in short, Bal Yera'eh and Bal Yematzeh, as two different mitzvahs, in which the Torah has mitzvahs, we're going to get into this later, that we cannot have any chametz visible, whatever that means, we'll see what that, particularly why we use that language, and no chametz can be found, whether it's chametz or sa'or, one pasuk uses chametz, and one the other pasuk uses sa'or, and we need to understand that there's no real difference between those of halacha. Sa'or is simply supercharged chametz. It's sourdough that can make other things chametz, and chametz is just regular fermented chamisha mine daga. So the idea that the Torah wants us to inhabit a chametz-free zone on Pesach is, oh my gosh. I mean, it's one thing to say that you're supposed to not eat a particular food. I mean, we're used to that kind of thing, Yisurei Achila, and even Yisurei Achila that come because of the special time, let's say on Yom Kippurim. I mean, but the idea that there is this concept of a different space in which you literally, it shall not be found, it shall not be seen. However we end up defining the nature of that finding or seeing, just taking it on the simplest level is that it's changing the entire sense of where we are on Pesach. Now, There's another very fascinating issue which we need to take into consideration, because that alone teaches us that, oh my gosh, we've got to do all types of preparations in order for that not to happen. Because, I mean, we can't start worrying about it on Pesach when the Torah says, Bal Yerael, Bal Yematzeh, it's too late. Once Pesach starts, what are we going to do then? We've already been over in inhabiting a space which is not chametz free. And this is not just a physical space, by the way, which would say we could put up big signs that say chametz free zone, you know, like the drugs. It's not the point. It's a mental space as well. Because when we're talking about a chametz-free zone, we're talking about even in terms of your ownership. There's nowhere around. But the Torah says that it cannot be in your rishus, which does not mean your local rishus, in which case we are talking about your mind inhabiting a chametz-free zone, which is far more than just a description of the issue of your local room that you happen to be sitting in. So that is an amazing concept, and it's ipso facto mechayev us in doing something before Pesach, because otherwise it's going to be too late. That's clear. That itself would be an amazing change, and then it gets worse, because the Torah says an additional mitzvah, and that's called the mitzvah of tashbitu. So b'yom harishon, tashbitu se'or mibatechem. What in the world does tashbitu even mean, Bichlal? And what is the Yom HaRishon? Obviously, the Yom HaRishon can't mean the first day of the Chag, because then you'd already be over. Not to mention the fact that in terms of the dinim of the Korban Pesach, we're already told that you're not allowed to be zoveach the Pesach with chometz in your rishus. Lo tizbach ala chametz dam zivchi, but you only shech the Pesach on Erev Pesach, which means that somehow or other, you've got to have gotten rid of it already by Erev Pesach. So we've got a number of different reasons. First of all, it's got to be out of your rishus for the Korban Pesach, but that's not dependent on the Korban Pesach. That's also dependent on the Yom Rishon Tashbitu, whatever Tashbitu means, which we'll discuss in a moment. So that means that we've got three different reasons, really, three different indications that we have to deal with whatever getting rid of chametz means. So what does getting rid of chametz before Pesach mean? What does the word tashbitu mean? Now, Rashi explains in a very beautiful insight that the concept of tashbitu is very, very strange to use a word like that. I mean, if the Torah wanted us to actually get rid of the chametz, physically get rid of the chametz, would it not be mechayev a physical act? Beer chametz, tivaru chametz mibatechem. Tashbitu is almost a passive kind of thing. What do you mean tashbitu? See to it that it is inactive. Weird kind of word, right? And in what sense is the chametz shoveit? Beautiful insight of Rashi, who explains that that is the reason that the chachamim were omit on the fact that the idea is almost a conceptual idea and not a physical idea. And from there comes the notion that tashbitu has to do with the way that your consciousness relates to the chametz, an amazing idea in which you can change the space in which you live by changing your consciousness, which is unbelievable, because obviously, ultimately, your space is defined by the nature of your consciousness. So how could you do that? So you have to firmly define the way that you view your space. And that is, what is that? That stuff that looks like crumbs or pieces of bread. Dirt. Meaningless. Not present as far as I'm concerned. What a weird idea. And that is called bitul chametz. In which case the tashbitu itself in the Torah is opening up the door to a mental tashbitu. If in your mind, and you'll note that this is what we say when we actually do the bitul chametz, v'lehevi ke'afra de'ara. Now we'll talk about that extra word of hefker, which is quite confusing, in a moment. But it should be like the dirt of the earth. That is a mental concept, which is a very interesting way of being mekayim what appears to be a physical mitzvah. Now, obviously, there are other ways of being mekayim tashbitu, because if you want to, if you would actually get rid of every piece of chometz that you had that could possibly have been within the definition of Baal Yera'eh or Baal Yematzeh, which we need to define later on, so then the physical act should be just as good as the mental act. So even though the Torah is using the word tashbitu, it seems to be a broadening of what you're capable of doing in order to get rid of your chometz and not a limiting. I mean, of course, you could say, now, wait a minute. I mean, just because you went on this massive search for chometz, how do you know you found all of your chometz? And therefore, maybe the Torah would not rely on your actually physically getting rid of the chometz, because if you change your mental vision of the chometz, then you know you've affected all of the chometz that needed to be dealt with. But if you're going to just be going out on a hunt for chometz, you cannot be certain that you have found every piece of chometz. So maybe you're mechuyav additionally in the tashbitu mentally, even if you would go out and destroy all your chometz. Now, the Ran says that's not possible. Why is it not possible? Because whenever the Torah actually demands something of us, the Lashon of the Ran is, HaTorah somech al hachazakot. In other words, we are never asked to do more than what we believe is the maximum that can be done. We've done whatever we can. There's no way that you would be required, says the Ran, to actually change if you physically got rid of all your chometz. It's not your problem if there's a little bit of chometz that you forgot. And therefore, that can't be the reason for the bittul. The reason for the bittul, suggests the Ran, and indeed the Rambam says something similar, is that we don't really believe that people know how to use their consciousness. Many people don't. And the idea that you can change your space by changing the way that you are aware of space is something that to many people doesn't even make any sense. They've never entertained how it is, the notion of how it is that their relationship to things is actually formed by their brain and not just by what they take for granted is the way things sort of are, whatever that means, right? So because of that, Chazal did not want you to rely as a general rule that would apply to everybody that they could just go around being mevatel, because to them that's just words. Okay, so I'm saying it should be like Afra Da'ara. It isn't really Afra Da'ara. Now, that would account for this additional idea which Tosfos says, the idea is not, Tosfos doesn't buy into what it is that Rashi understands of the change between Tevaru and Tashbitu, that allows you to consciously change things. No. Tosfos says what allows you to consciously change things is a halacha, not some kind of weird new age idea of consciousness. It must be an act of hefker. Now, we know that hefker is a perfectly valid legal idea. So what you're really doing when you're being mevatel, and this is where that word hefker ka'afra da'ara comes from, is you're actually making something that you own, not your own, by being mafker it. Now, I can do that. I mean, if I have something that is mine, then it remains legally mine until I actually give up my balut. I give up my balut by a formal act of hefker. The problem is, of course, that a formal act of hefker requires three people. It requires me to actually say it. And according to some, until somebody else actually takes that hefker, it won't even, it will remain in my rishus. It won't be removed from my rishus. So how can we actually use hefker as a solution to Baal Yera'eh, Baal Yematzeh in a technical sense of hefker? So that's a problem. And the way that the Aruch HaShulchan understands the solution to that problem is that clearly hefker over here does not have to deal with the normal sense of ownership. Why is that? That is because you actually do not really own your chometz the way you own other things. And this is another concept, and it's called Shnei Dvarim Einam Berushuto Shel Adam Ve'asa'an HaTorah Ki'ilu Heim Berushutam. There are two places in the Torah where you don't own something, and the Torah gave you a din of an owner. What are those two things? So one is a bor b'rishut rabbi. You dig a hole in the middle of the street and somebody falls in, you need to pay. you don't need to pay because you caused damage, because causing damage as a grumma is not a siba, as it is in modern civil law, is not considered to be a reason to make you pay for something. The Torah's concept of torts is built around the fact that you are responsible for your things. Ba'al ha'bor yishalem. The owner of the bor must pay. What do you mean, owner of the bor? How can I own a hole in the middle of the street? I don't own that hole. Ah, but the Torah has turned you into the owner of the hole for all legal purposes. Now, the same thing is true about Chometz on Pesach, because another very special thing about Chometz on Pesach is that it's asur b'hana'ah. And it is not only asur to eat, you are not allowed to get any kind of benefit whatsoever. So does it have any financial value if you can't have any benefit from it? Absolutely zero. You can't sell it. You can't make money from it. And therefore, how could you have an ownership of something that doesn't have any legally defined value? It's the same thing as owning a hole. How can you own a hole? Ah, but the point is that the Torah has indeed made you the owner of the chametz. Now, for that type of ownership, it is indeed sufficient, Dynasty Aruch HaShulchan, to indicate that you want to have nothing to do with that chometz, have no intention of getting anything out of it. And under that special limited concept of ownership, that hefker is clearly what Tosus believes would be good enough to serve as the bittul. So, okay, that begins our foray into what it is that's going on over here. Because if I could be mevatel, so whether it's a din in consciousness, I understand why Chazal wouldn't want me to rely on that. But according to Tosfos, that it's a din in hefker, that's a very classic idea. Why would the Gemara, or why would Chazal beit a gezeira that no, you've got to do this weird thing called bedikas chometz at night and get rid of all your chometz in the morning? Where would that come from if I could do bittul? So Tosfos has a very simple explanation. His explanation is because you might eat the chometz, not because of bal yira bal yimatzei. Because consider the unique situation of chometz. When you're dealing with other isurim, they are either blanket isurim. On Yom Kippur, you don't eat, or they are isurim that you are used to all year round. That is nevela. That is truma. And what are you going to say? That is wheat? What do you mean, that is wheat? I always eat wheat. So now I got to start thinking, is it the kind of wheat I'm eating? I mean, I don't get it. I've got two boxes, you know, one is kosher Pesach matzah, one is not kosher Pesach matzah, and I'm going to see one and I'm going to say, that I can't eat that. I mean, there's nothing in me that would possibly have that kind of reaction. So lacking anything that would point me to the not eat, do not eat, you're always concerned about casually putting something into your mouth. And then when it's too late, realizing, oh my God, that was chometz. So because of that, Tosfos says, the whole idea of doing the bedika and doing the beer chometz has to be done in addition, therefore, to doing this hefker and so on. So the hefker part is in terms of bal yira'eh bal yimatzeh, and the bedika part is in terms of maybe you will eat it. But then the other question is, if we take the opposite approach and we've done actually the physical biur, why do we still need to do the bittul? That's a question. I mean, I did what I could. I got rid of it. And the Torah is not mechayev me to do more than I can do and relies on the chazakot, which is true all over the place. Let's say I have a similar idea by Avodah Zarah, right? Lo yidbak biyatcha me'uma menacherem. Make sure there's nothing in your house that was part of the church's property and so on. Okay, so are you telling me I'm going to be over if I didn't recognize this and or it was buried under something and I didn't know it was there? Of course I'm not over. As soon as I find it, I get rid of it. That's all. So why is that not enough? As soon as you find it, you get rid of it. And here, the Gemara will explain later on that this is because of another concept. I hope you're keeping all these conceptual things and writing them down. Shema yimtza gluska yafa. Because what might happen is that in the event that there was something that you forgot, and in the top of some cabinet where now all of a sudden you're going up looking for something in Pesach, you suddenly find this lovely birthday cake that you forgot that your daughter had put up there on the top of the cabinet the week before Pesach from her birthday. Oh, man, you say, boy, does that look good. And then you say, oh, chas v'shalom, it's Pesach. But what happened in the moment that you said, oh, man, that looks good? If you hadn't been mevatel, and for that one moment, you did not grab that birthday cake and say, yeah, and run to the toilet to throw it out, right? So then during that time when you're considering, wow, that looks good, then your space changes because now chametz looks good. And in that instant, you would in fact be over on Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh. So in order to avoid a situation like that, we want to make certain that even if you find that birthday cake, that's not going to be mechayev you in Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh, because it's not yours. And until such time as you would actually make it yours and pick it up and say, yum, yum, you wouldn't be over on Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh because of the fact that you did the bit. So basically what we're doing is we're covering all of the angles that we won't eat the chametz. If we find the gluska yafa, we won't be over on Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh. We won't make it dependent on people who are not really fully aware of their own minds and how their minds work and how it's part of their relationship to reality. And we cover ourselves in every possible way. But why? I mean, why all of a sudden are we so machmir to be certain that we have crossed every T, dotted every I, and tried to make certain that we wouldn't come to some kind of iser? Well, first of all, as I pointed out, this is unique because it's a different space, something that the Torah is never mechayev. B, it's very special because usually an iser of achila is an iser of achila of a kezayit. Now, weirdly, when it comes to chametz, there is an iser even on a mashahu. The Rambam learns this out of a special pasuk, which we'll talk about later. Not the normal din of mashu being that even pochus b'kashir is usher. That's not the point. Because pochus b'kashir is usher because it's chozi le'itztarufe, another term. It's because you can add it to other pieces. But in and of itself, it's not usher. Here, in and of itself, it's actually usher. And this makes nafka minas la'alocha, legabi being over at the last minute of the day when it's not chosiv, it's tarufe. B, it's not going to be batal. Even the tiniest bit of chometz, even though normally, of course, a mashu is batal. We have a din of bitul berov. There's no din of bitul when it comes to a mashu of chometz, as we're going to discuss later on in the Masechta. C, there is a chi of kares, as opposed to, okay, you eat a piece of chazer, a piece of nevela. I mean, you know, so, okay, so it's an iser lav. And as we said, D, eno bodomine. This is something that you are so not used to doing. And it's the only place where the Torah demands the change in space. So because of that, we've got all of these various issues. And putting them all together, together with one more thing, in my opinion, I mean, I haven't seen this anywhere, but with one more thing, we end up with this chumrah. And the one more thing is actually merumas in the very daf that we're going to learn today. And that is that there's no specific time for doing this. As the Torah says, when normally the Torah gives us a mitzvah, it's Erev Shabbos. Okay, it's 3 minutes to Shkia. Run, get everything done. I know exactly what has to be done, when it has to be done. This is a very weird situation because it's the same day. During part of the day, I'm eating chametz. And during the other part of the day, I'm not even allowed to have any chametz in my property if I'm going to be bringing a Korban Pesach. And according to the Rambam, I'm not allowed to have it in my property because Yotz Bal Yira'eh Bal Yimatzeh Ischal even on Erev Pesach. When? Well, midday. Thanks a lot. Like, what is there that shows me midday that I'm going to be aware of? If the day is beginning or if the day is closing, I understand that the Torah gives me mitzvahs that are chal on the day. What in the world does it mean to have a mitzvah that at some random point, which is defined maybe by astronomy, but it's certainly not something that I am going to be aware of? Isn't that a very difficult thing to expect of me to get this done particularly? Now, that itself is a reason for why we would want a clear-cut beginning to the process of Pesach. And that by giving us the mitzvah at night, that as soon as it's nightfall, it's time for us to drop everything and start the Bedikas Chometz, and all of us, I'm sure, have this psychological experience and recognize it, that this is really a very fundamental part of Pesach. That night before Pesach that starts the Bedikas Chometz is our introduction to the whole thing. Now, all of a sudden, everything starts getting really nerve-wracking. What are we going to do about the Chometz? Where do we put it? How do we get rid of it? Et cetera, right? If it wouldn't be for that, so imagine, you know, yeah, breakfast the next morning, you haven't even thought about Chometz yet, and oh my God, what time is it? Oh, shoot, why am I going to get rid of my Chometz now? And so on. So because of that, that mitzvah is really a very powerful stimulus to the entry into the space of Pesach, and therefore, by having a mitzvah that is chal specifically at a time when we're together and can respond to it as a togetherness mitzvah like Shabbos and all of our other mitzvahs of a day, because of that, we have this special din. So again, this is just a brief introduction to some of the issues that we're going to be discussing. Let us begin with our beautiful duet between Doc and Sir Richard, where we've got a fight on the Halakha Masechet. You got to unmute yourself. There we go. Okay, boys, give it all you got.
Funkstiff.
On the Halakha
Masechet. Okay. Very good. So we are ready to begin our Halakha Mishnah of our Halakha Masechet. All of this in memory of Saba Josh and all of the wonderful ways that he would introduce the Masechet. Or li arba'a sarbot kinet ha-chametz l'or ha-ner, kum bakom she'im maklisim bo chametz, in tzorech bedika. So we begin with this idea that the light of the 14th of Nisan, what in the world is the light of the 14th of Nisan? I mean, obviously we know what it is because we've been there, you know, so it clearly doesn't mean the light. It must mean the night, but it's a very strange way to talk about the night by talking about the light. And this, of course, is going to be our first concern. What in the world does the Mishnah mean when it says the light of the 14th of Nisan? And that's when we do the Bedikas of Chometz and we use Bedavka, the light of a candle. Okay, but you should know that this is not a place where you can reasonably expect to find chametz there, because it's not a makom shemachnisim bo chametz, so then if you wouldn't normally go there with chametz, there's no reason for you to need to search for the chametz. Well, if that's true, so then where in the world did we get the idea of bameh amru shtei shurot b'marteif? I mean, what about the famous statement? Now, this is what famous statement? What do you mean a famous statement? This is the only place we know this statement is from this Mishnah. What's the famous statement? Now, this amazingly is the source of a beautiful piece that the Rav Ki Vager brings, that you see very clearly that the Seder of the Mishnah, I mean, we know this from so many places, but that the Seder of the Mishnah, that Rabbeinu HaKodesh was Koveya, is a Mishnah that is based on many ancient formulations that we had and were given over Baal Peh about particular dinim that he needed to incorporate. And everybody knows that there was such a concept of Shtei Shurot B'Marteif. Now, it's very shorthand. We don't even know exactly which Shtei Shurot, what kind of Marteif, and so on. But because Rebbe is incorporating this idea into a Mishnah, which is stating openly that only a place that is normally used for Chometz demands a Bedikas Chometz, it's therefore confusing. So how do we explain the first version of the mitzvah of Bedikas Chometz, which is to check your wine cellar? A wine cellar? And two rows in your wine cellar, which I don't know what two rows mean, two complete rows of all of the columns and all of the rows, or two of the rows without the columns, or does it mean going all the way back on top, or the rows in front? I have no idea what it means, but whatever it does mean, isn't a wine cellar not precisely the place where you would have chametz? So why did it say that? It's only a wine cellar that is machnisim bo chametz, meaning that it's the type of wine cellar that is accessed in the middle of the meal if you have run out of wine. So there are wine cellars, of course, in which only the butler will go into at particular times, bring out the wine and put them into the fridge, the wine fridge upstairs. But there are wine cellars that are essentially pantries. And if you're in the middle of the meal and somebody wants a different kind of wine, so then we would access that wine cellar. Fine. That's what we're talking about. But Enochinami, a normal wine cellar, we would not need to do a bedika. Now, once we're on the subject, what exactly is shtei shurot on the martef? So Beit Shammai says shtei shurot on the martef are shtei shurot al pnei kol hamartef. It means the entire two shurot. Now that even that doesn't make sense. We're going to see. We're going to have machlokas. What exactly Beit Shammai holds or what Beit Hillel holds? Whereas Beit Hillel says no, it's only the outer rows, which are the top. So it would be the two rows, no columns. Whereas Beit Shammai seems to be saying all of the columns across and all of the rows going down. Fine. Anyway, but let's start with the question of what the Mishnah even means when it says that Or li'arba asa. What does Or li'arba asa mean? Again, we know what Or li'arba asa means. It obviously means the evening of the 14th, which is the day of the Hakravas HaKorban. So, my Or. Rav Huna says, or means light. Thanks a lot. Rav Yehuda says, or means night. Now, we took this literally at the beginning. And Kasalka Daitach, we assumed that what it meant was that if you say or means light, you mean literally it means light daytime, right? And the Mandi Omar Laila means no, or means really nighttime. Now, the Rishonim are concerned by this bit about you really mean that or means nighttime, because we really do mean that or means nighttime. So what do you mean? Because salka daitach, we thought. It's not we thought. In the end, that's what it's going to mean, right? So some take out, sorry, some take out this part of the Girsa. I think that it makes a tremendous amount of sense, this Girsa. What the Gemara is trying to say is that we thought that the meaning is an exclusive meaning. And that when you say that R means light, you mean it can only mean light. And when you say that R means the daytime, that is its exclusive use. And because of that, we've got a lot of questions about this, where it's very clear that that is definitely not the exclusive use. So let's see some of our problems with this. So first of all, says the Gemara, we've got a problem as follows. It says in the Pasuk HaBoker, or the Ha'anashim Shulchu, the morning was or. Okay, so I don't know, the morning was or. That seems to be saying that morning is or. And then they sent off the brothers of Yosef and to go home. But that would certainly mean HaBoker, which is or, the Ha'anashim Shulchu, which means that or is Yamama. How can you argue on that? That's pretty clear, isn't it? Says the Gemara, no, it's not clear at all. We are not using or as a noun. If it would have said ha'or boker, miksiv ha'or boker, it doesn't say the light is also called morning. No, ha'boker or is a verb, and it means morning has broken. That's all that it means, in which case it's a verb. Okay, I sang already, Barnea. How much conducting do you need to do? So therefore, it's no raya. We're looking at the word or as a noun, not as a verb. So forget about that. So it's command yom et safra nahar. It's like people say, morning is broken. We can review the Amarav. And why is the Torah coming telling us morning is broken? Because it's telling us halacha. The Omer of Yonam Arav, lo'olam yikanes adam b'chitov, v'yetse b'chitov, the word vayar Elohim et ha'or kitov. That means that there's something good about being in the light. And if you're going to travel from the early morning, get to your motel before it turns dark, and that is yetse b'chitov, in the light that God called good. That's what it means. And that's basically why the Pasuk stresses that Yosef HaTzadik sent his brothers off only at the correct time, when it was good for them to travel and safe for them to travel. Metve, okay. So explain to me what you're going to do now with the next pasuk. Ucha'or boker yizrach shemesh. And like the morning, the sun, with the morning which is called or, that's what it seems to be saying, the sun will shine. Okay, what does that mean? I mean, obviously it means or yamama. No. Does it say or boker? It says ki or boker. What it's making is an analysis of a comparison. Ki or boker. So all that it's trying to say is that the same way, the same way that or boker, what the morning starts becoming light in this world, I mean, at dawn, it's really dark at dawn. It's like a little bit of light, you know, that you could see on the horizon. But that time in Olam Haba will be Ke'en Zrich HaShemesh L'Tzadikim Olam Haba. The equivalent time in Olam Haba will be like the actual breaking out of the sun at the Netzachama. So that is the power of light in Olam Haba. It has nothing to do with the morning is light. No. Okay, what about this? Vayikra Elohim Lo'or Yom. Oh, there you go. God called or day. And that is a pretty good definition of the word or, isn't it? Alma or Yamamahu. No, it's not what it means. It means God called the burgeoning light, the growing light, Lameir Uba Krao Yom. That period in which light becomes more and more, nothing to do with he called a light Yom. So as light grows, that's daytime. Excuse me? So then you would have to say the same thing is true in the other pasuk. V'lachoshech kor ha'layla. And this is now going to mean that as it begins getting dark, so that's called nighttime, but that's not true. Remember we had back in Brachot, that actually it is not just at the shkia time that it's called night. It has to be tzeta kochavim. So it's not as it's getting darker. So it doesn't make sense that we don't have a parallel in the Tupsukim. Ela hachi kamar. You don't understand. Kara over here is not defined as, which is usually the meaning of kara, as the Zohar points out. You give a definition to. In this case, it means to call, to appear. And what it means is when a king gives you a calling, he's given you a job. And that's the point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Korah. He calls the light, meaning he appointed the light. So Kaya Rachmana Lenuhura, he called the light and said, you are responsible for this period, which is day. But it has nothing to do with defining the word or as yom. And the same thing is true about darkness. Darkness was appointed. And it was appointed Kaya Rachmana Lechashucha, Upakte a mitzvata de laila, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it the mitzvah to care for the time which is called nighttime. Okay, let me see if this is true. Meisve, I got a question. Hallelujah, kol kochve or. Okay, the stars of the or. Now, as far as I know, we do not see stars in the daytime. We see stars in the nighttime. And therefore, how could Ravuna say that or means day? Over here, it's quite clear that or means night, the stars of the night. Alma or urtos. You see that indeed. Or means the nighttime. No, that's not what it means. It means all you bright, shiny stars. Stars of light. That's what it means. Hallelujah, kol kochavim ha-me'irim. That's ridiculous. How could it mean that? Because then it would mean that black holes are not supposed to be Mahalal Hashem, says the Gemara. So what, you're telling me I'm only going to tell the Kochavim to give Halal to Hashem because they give off light. So suppose they don't give off light. Suppose they absorb light. So now they're putter from giving Halal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's ridiculous. So Elameata Kochavim HaMe'irim Hudaboy Shabuche. So only radiating stars are supposed to be Makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, She'enan Me'irin Lo Boy Shabuche. But if they don't give off light, so if you're talking about a dead star, you're talking about a black hole, it's not part of the Bria that is Meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not true. Because we know the Pasuk says, Hallelujah, Kol Tziva'av. So Koltsevav obviously includes black holes. So how could you say a little kokokleor? You're right. Okay. Elaka Mashma, maybe what it's telling us is that Haleluko Kokove Or, it still means the stars that give light, but it's not coming to tell me as opposed to stars that don't give light. What it's saying is that if stars do give light and you are millions and millions of light years away from that light, and therefore you would say, light that only allows me to see the thing but doesn't lighten other things is not called light. So if I would make a neder that I'm not going to be nenef from light, so maybe I would be allowed to go out and use starlight. Therefore, kamashvel on the pasuk, that if there's no commonly defined usage, and we look for the pasuk for a neder, and the pasuk is saying starlight, starlight, star bright, is considered to be light. That's the point. Okay, fine. So let me bring you another raya. All right. I don't believe Rav Yehuda is right. Or means night, not day. What are you going to do with the pasuk of La'or Yakum Rotzeach? At morning, the murderer wakes up, killing the poor. Yiktal aniv evyon. So he kills the poor and those who are destitute. Uvalayla yehich ganav. And then at night, when everybody is sleeping, he doesn't need to kill. He merely needs to burglarize. So then he makes himself into a robber. But during the daytime, he's a murderer. Anyway, but does it or does it not stress the contrast between Lo'or Yakum and Balayla Yikiganav? There you go. So that means Or means the daytime and Laila means the nighttime. No? I mean, if it says it that way, since it's contrasting in the Pasuk, so Midika Amar, since it says Beferish first, Balayla Yikiganav, then that must mean that the initial opening of the Or has to mean the daytime. No, come on, guys. Yeah, Pasuk is just telling me about daytime and nighttime and how murderers and criminals act. It's telling me halacha. It's saying like this. You need to be absolutely sure that la'or, meaning la'or means clear as light. It's like we use things. Things are clear. Okay, so if it's obvious to you that the person that is breaking into your home is ready to murder you in the event that you stand up against them and you try to save your property, then Lo'or Rotseachu, he has a din of a murderer, and therefore shoot him, Nitan Latzilo B'Nafsho, because then he becomes a Rodef. That's what the pasuk is saying. For all intents and purposes, this guy is breaking into your home. This is Kiganav. But if it's clear to you that he'd be ready to shoot, shoot him first. Don't run away. Don't call the cops. Shoot him. So that's what the pasuk is coming to tell you. Now, there's two ways of understanding this. Rashi understands it that if it's clear, it has to be clear as day, means it's a given that it's clear as day. And the only time that it wouldn't be that way would be, let's say it's a father breaking in to a child's house. So then we know he wouldn't kill his child. Tosfos says that, I mean, it doesn't make sense. It must be that the pasuk is talking about bedavka, the situation where it is a father that's breaking in. And it's saying that if and only if it's absolutely clear to you that this is the kind of father that will kill you if you are going to stand up against him, so then shoot. Okay, but in any event, it is not talking about contrasting daytime and nighttime. It's that ipshita l'chamilta kenehur, if it's clear as light to you, that this burglar is ready to kill you, then rotseachu v'nitan latzilo b'nafsho. So then you can kill him. But imisafke l'chamilta kalaylia, if on the other hand, it is unclear to you, and therefore it's like the nighttime, then ibenecha kaganav, you have to assume that he is only a ganav, and then you can't shoot him because, again, as Rashi learned, because he's your father, and as Tosfos is learning, that it would be a given if it's a father. Okay, next question. Still, it doesn't make sense, Rav Yehuda, because Meisvei. Here it says from Iyov, Yechshechu kochvei nishpo Yikav lo'or v'ayin v'al yir'eh be'afafei shachar. So what is this saying? May his stars go dark. Let them desire or, but there is no or. May he not see or it not see. We're going to see whether it's it or he. The growing light of dawn. How do you call the zahrure, like when you have the beautiful, you know, sun shafts that are coming through a cloud?
Ray?
What's
ray?
It called?
Ray?
Yeah, like a ray of yeah. So you should not see the rays of the dawn. Now, since it says Yikav lo'or v'ayin, which I think it means it, meaning that night that is awaiting the dawn, should not have it. So then it would say, what is it waiting for, the night? It's waiting for the or, but the or would be the morning, which is the end of the night, right? No, wrong. It doesn't mean the night. It means the person. And this is Eov referring to himself and cursing his lot in life, in which he says, he's basically addressing the horrible destiny of his life. And he's saying, may God will it that that idiot, meaning himself, should always be waiting for light and never find it, meaning the mazel of his life, never have any kind of mazel. Okay, fine. So how about this pasuk? Va'omar, David HaMelech says, Va'omar, ach choshech yishufeni v'layla or ba'adeni. So I said David, when I was in the middle of the horrible way that people were treating me and the rodfim all around me and the malshinim all around me, I thought that my destiny is to be swallowed by the darkness. And instead, the night became or. So that seems to be saying the night became day, right? No. What David was saying is, I was referring by night and day, I'm referring to Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. So I thought, even in Olam Haba, I'm screwed. And even in Olam Haba, Achoshech Yishufeni LaOlam Haba, which is the time of Yom. And that's what I thought, that I would never get out of this mess and Hashem would never forgive me. But now even Olam Hazeh, which is Laila, has become light around me because now I know Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit to David and so on. So because of that, even this world, not nighttime, but this world, which is similar to nighttime, has turned into light time. But it's not a concept of night versus day. Okay. Whoa. All right. So we don't have any raya against Rav Yehuda. Maybe we could bring a raya against Rav Huna that or has to mean daytime. So Meisvei. Rav Yehuda Omer, now we're finally zeroing in on our sugya. So Rav Yehuda says, because again, we thought that what Rav Huna was saying is that it literally means daytime, and that would mean that Bedikas Chometz needs to be done in the day, right? If that's what it meant. So how do you explain the Mishnah that we are going to have just in another week or so, where it says, Rav Yehuda Omer, so Rav Yehuda says, first your bodek in the Or Le'arba Asa. Then your bodik again in the morning of the Arbasar. Wait a minute. So in the morning of Arbasar is after the or of the Arbasar, which apparently means that the or of the Arbasar was in the nighttime prior to the morning of the Arbasar, right? And then again, at the time that you need to burn the chametz, which the Gemara will explain later, you have to be bodik again, or you can be bodik, and we'll see exactly what it means there. Now, if Rav Yehuda is contrasting the first bedika at the or and the second bedika at the shacharis, what could or mean except the nighttime? Says Gemara, you're right. Shema Amino really seems to be correct. Wow. Or has got to mean night and not what Rav Huna is saying, that has got to mean day. I got another raya. Now, Lamaisa, the reason that we are bringing a lot of rayas is because, as I said before, our Havamina is that when he meant this, he meant it only, right? When we bring, in other words, it's only daylight that it would mean. When we bring one Raya, we can now understand, okay, fine, so it doesn't only mean that, but it presumably means that. So if I can show you 20 places where it doesn't mean that, It bedavka means night. Are you ready to say that there's no presumptive meaning of day? So then what do you mean when you say or means day? So even if Ravuna is to pull back and say, okay, but it's not a tiyufta, I didn't mean it cannot mean the night. I meant that you're supposed to presume it means day. So now the Gemara wants to show you, I'll show you five places where it means night. Why would he say such a thing that presumably it means day? That seems to be the pshat where we go from the kasalka daitach that they really meant this, means exclusively, to kasalka daitach that they mean it presumably, and therefore we're asking on the presumption. Meisve. So then we have a problem from this brisa because there's no such presumption. Now, this question of the isra of asiyas melacha, Rashi says, is dependent on a minag of the makam. There are places where people didn't work all day Erev Pesach. There are places where they didn't work from the middle of the day on Erev Pesach. And now we're talking about that time. Tosus points out that this does not seem to be the meaning of the Gemara at all, because we're talking over here, apparently, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not a minag, it's an iser. And therefore, the reference over here, which makes the whole thing much clearer, as Tosus points out, is that what we're asking is literally, at what point is there an iser of asiyas melacha? So Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, from the time of Or. Rabbi Yehuda says, from the Netzach Hamah. Okay, comes along, now you have to see the entire context here. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and says to Rabbi Yehuda, and this has to do with the point that I made to you earlier about how strange it is that we should have a mitzvah that kicks in the middle of the day. We don't have any reference point for when it kicks in. And I suggested that that would be part of the reason that we have a specific mitzvah at the nighttime of doing the Bedikas Chometz. Here is where the Gemara finally hints at that concept. And so says Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov to Rabbi Yehuda, that's nuts, because that's the middle of the day. Where do we find that a day is partially usur to do malacha, partially mutter to do malacha? That's nutty. I mean, either the Torah makes a day holy or it says the day is whole. It can't be half and half, can it? So Rabbi Yehuda said, I don't understand. Erev Pesach is an insane day in exactly that way, isn't it? I can ask you the same thing. The day itself shows that there's something crazy about this day. Half of it is Asr Bachilas Chametz and half of it is Mutter Bachilas Chametz. So what do you got problems with me for? Now, let's just analyze what this means. Since Rabbi Yehuda had said it's Asr from the Netzach Hamah, then when Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov said it's Asr from Or, that must mean it's the night before. So we see that we're using the language of Or to mean the night before. No, excuse me. Maybe what he means is at dawn. And that what you were talking about from Nates, no, not from Nates, not from midday, from the dawn. No, come on. Because then when Rabbi Eliezer said to Rabbi Yehuda, and where do we find such a thing that a day is partially mutter basiyas melacha, partially asur basiyas melacha, that also means from dawn? Don't be ridiculous. Because then he could say the same thing to himself. Nema iul nafshei, he could say to himself, what do you mean? This is a crazy day. The Torah only asked me to do the work from the morning and not from the night before. So what's he so upset at Rabbi Yehuda for? He could say exactly those words to himself. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Listen carefully and you'll see that it's not necessarily so. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov might be saying like this to Rabbi Yehuda. Listen, Rabbi Yehuda, my friend, according to me, everything makes sense, okay? Because I know that there's a difference between daytime and nighttime in a Gezeirah D'Rabbanan. For instance, a tainis tzibur where there are ta'anesim that begin in the morning. So you can ask, how come you're allowed to eat at night? Either the day is a tainis or not a tainis. No, you will not say that. Why will you not say that? Because indeed the halacha is that the Rabbanan make a Gezeirah separating night and day. Okay, so I have no problem because we find this by a tainis tzibur. Ad matay ochel v'shoteh ad shi'ala amud ha-shachar. Fine. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Shimon says, ad krot ha-gaver. But according to you, where is there a concept of in the middle of the day? Don't you understand? You're saying in the middle of the day, something's going to become also. Hey, chashkechani yamom agu for the pagi b'rabbanan. Show me any place where at some arbitrary time in the day, all of a sudden, it's going to, something's going to become also. And to this, Rabbi Yehuda said, show you. The day itself is insane. Isn't that the whole point of Erev Pesach? Hu atzmo yochiach, miksato mutar b'achilas chometz, u'miksato asur b'achilas chometz. Hey, that is a pretty darn good point. What was Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov thinking? Isn't the whole point of Erev Pesach that it's weird? And he's just being consistently weird like the other halachas of Erev Pesach? No. Rabbi Eliezer, look, Rabbi Eliezer would say back to him, listen, excuse me. I'm talking to you about this thing that the Rabbanim asur, about doing work, right? And you're telling me the Torah asur achila in the middle of the day. The Torah can do whatever it wants. This whole such thing is weird. If this is the way God wants it, this is the way God wants it. But how in the world would the Chachamim do something weird? People don't do weird things. Only God does weird things. So therefore, if you're talking about a gezerah, that's everything is a gezerah sakosev, you know? It's sort of weird that you have to cut the shechita in this way and not that way. I mean, that's pretty weird. Now, we're used to things like that. We don't attempt to understand what appears to us to be weird. But when it comes to the Rabbanan always deal with the human response to these things, right? So what would be the meaning of like doing something halfway, right? So I'm telling you, Malach the Rabbanan, you come back with chometz d'oraisa. Like everything, to this point it's mutter, to this point it's usser. What isn't like that in the Torah? It's all weird. So what would Rabbi Yehuda say to that? Rabbi Yehuda would say, what do you mean? But over here, what about those extra hours? The Chachamim asur eating the hour before, or burning chametz, burning truma 2 hours before. Those are weird things that are just in the middle of nowhere. Says Rabbi Eliezer, weird things in the middle of nowhere. Those are extensions of the times that the Torah gave. If you're starting with weird times, so obviously the extensions are going to be weird times, but I'm talking to you about a new thing. That's a harchaka, the Avad Rabbanon l'diraisa. So that is an additional point, but you can't bring a raya from there, which has to do with our sugya of when you're allowed to do work. But meanwhile, the Torah has indeed raised here, the Gemara has indeed raised here the fascinating point that we would not stam make a takana where we don't have anything but what appears to be an arbitrary point at which it would kick in. And I believe that that is part of what the Gemara is going to say later on, that we make the takana at night. The Gemara says, because we'd all be together and we can do it together. But that itself is a response to exactly this issue.